Welcome to WRHU's One-on-One Stories. For the next 30 minutes, our host, Dr. Gregory Barroza, will talk with influential and inspirational guests. One-on-One Stories explores all areas of life and lifestyles affected by health, fitness, nutrition, medicine, mental attitude, and general well-being. Our guests discussed unique aspects of their lives and work, including current, controversial, and offbeat subjects of interest to all of us. It's One-on-One Stories with Dr. Gregory Barroza.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ear. I got a bad case of loving you.
When emergency physician Dr. Andrea Labuti was told that her previously normal infant son Jack had autism, she was devastated. Therapists told her that Jack would no longer be able to communicate with others, nor would he ever form meaningful relationships anymore. Dr. Labuti refused to accept that dim prognosis and instead embarked on many years of an ongoing journey to discover healing for herself as a parent and for Jack. Using her position as a physician to gain access to a variety of specialists, she explored every promising biomedical and behavioral therapeutic option. She emerged with a unique and inspirational perspective from both an emotional and spiritual understanding. Today, in a two-part interview, Dr. Labuti shares the second half of her very personal story with us. You're listening to One-on-One Stories with me, your host, Dr. Gregory Barroza.
I'd like to welcome our listening audience and introduce you to today's guest, Dr. Andrea Labuti. Dr. Labuti has been a practicing, board-certified emergency physician for the past 14 years. She is presently an attending physician at the Eastern Long Island Hospital in Greenport, Long Island, New York. Concomitantly, Dr. Labuti founded and operated her own private Spectrum Healing Center from April 2002 through April 2010. Her center specialized in caring for patients with autism. Dr. Labuti became personally engaged in the study of autism when her infant son Jack was first diagnosed with autism. She now considers autism to be one of the most complex conditions on the planet. And understanding this condition is made even more difficult due to what she terms, quote, information or perhaps even misinformation overload. In April 2015, Hay House published Dr. Labuti's book called Awakened by Autism. Through her own personal journey of discovering what autism means to her and to her son Jack, she became a unique expert in this field of poorly understood behavioral anomalies. Dr. Labuti has been a frequent contributor and guest in various print, radio, and video media, including The Huffington Post, Mind Body Green, Hear Your Life by Hay House, Simple Reminders, and now our show, One-on-One Stories. Dr. Labuti, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
This is part two of our series here, and we want to pick up with how you came to the realization that some of these autistic children are actually very, very bright.
Sure. Thank you for that question. It's a good one. It took me a while to figure out just how bright my child was, and I know it's hard for parents, especially those of the nonverbal autistic kids, but there is such a large amount of information now that that is coming to, you know, the press and social media, and we're discovering just how intelligent these kids are. With my own son, I had been homeschooling him until 2016. That was 3 years I was homeschooling him. So, you know, as a parent, you know, you're working with your kid every day. You know they're bright, but you can't quite put your finger on why they're bright because, you know, my son has autism. He's not taking tests like other kids are taking. He's not reading at the levels other kids are taking. But there's just this sort of gut feeling. Well, fortunately, the school that my son, resides in the district requires periodic testing. So in June of 2016, which was obviously last year, we had a psychological evaluation done and an IQ test done. And the IQ test that was done, IQ tests for autistic kids are tough because the majority of the test relies on verbal verbal information or verbal processing. And a lot of kids with autism have problems with verbal and language processing. But there was one particular piece of this IQ test. It was called the WISC-5, that was all based on visual spatial aptitude. So I was sitting with Jack, and he was in the, you know, examiner's office, and, you know, we were 2 hours into this testing. It was about a 2.5-hour test. And we get to the visual spatial part, and Jack is flying through it. So he's flying through it. He's hitting everything dead on, and then we get to the very end of it. And the examiner actually looked at me and said, you know, my nickname is Andy. He said, "Andy, if Jack gets this last one, I'm done, because in all the years that I've been doing this test, nobody has ever solved this last one on this intelligence test." So not only did Jack solve it, he solved it in record time. So, for example, 90 seconds was the record. Jack solved it in 62 seconds. And this piece of the test, the visual spatial aptitude, he scored in the 99.9th percentile. And what's important about that, what I discovered was important about that is, you know, visual spatial is a learning channel. So it's not just some strange esoteric savant ability, you know, like photographic memory or something like that. Visual spatial aptitude is actually a learning channel. There's auditory sequential, which is how most of our schools are teaching kids nowadays, and there's visual spatial, and then there's kinesthetic and tactile. So there's these four learning channels, and my son happened to be a super genius at this one particular learning channel. You know, and here he is at the time, I guess he was 12 years old, and I'm thinking, wow, what do I do with this? He's clearly got superior intelligence, but he's got a lot of challenges also. So that was sort of the way I stumbled across, a quantifiable way of defining his superior intelligence. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, as a parent and also with a medical background, what body systems are affected by autism? These children do have some other potential ailments that are commingled or indirectly related to this anomaly. So maybe you can help the audience help identify what would be affected and what lies ahead for them.
Sure. You know, that sort of plays into treatments, which we can talk about as well. Every child is different, right? When I was trained, my mentor was Dr. Sidney Baker, a big name in the autistic community. One of the things that he said has always stuck with me. Every single child is an individual. And if you've met one child with autism, you've met one child with autism. So, I mean, or if you've met 100 children with autism, you've met 100 different children. So although we can group some sort of body systems, there's so many variations within each of these body systems. I don't want people to assume that everybody's going to have the same problem. So I just want to preface it with that. But obviously, the neurologic system. So what we can say for sure is that there is some difference in the way these kids are wired. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. And what I mean by a good thing is Jack has perfect pitch, right? He can hear things we don't hear. He has a visual spatial ability that most people don't have. And there's other things. It's almost like a hyper-acute sensory system. So with the five senses, most of these kids have hyperacute sensory systems. So you can imagine that could be good and that could be bad. It's bad because you go into a crowded, loud, mall or shopping center, and these kids are going to be so overwhelmed that they can't function. But you have somebody that has perfect pitch or this musical ability or an artistic ability that is, you know, unprecedented. That's a good thing. So teasing out those two pieces of the sensory system, I think, is really important. So the sensory system, the gastrointestinal system or the digestive system. I think that a good majority of autistic individuals have problems with their digestion. But the interesting thing, Dr. Barroza, is a lot of us just living in our modern society have problems with our digestion, right? Look at all the people that are gluten intolerant. Look at all the people that can't handle soy, right? So there's this, it's not just the autistic kids. It's like a lot of us are having problems with our digestive system. The other piece of this is the immune system. You know, the digestion, the immune system, the neurologic system, they're all so tightly coupled in the body. But the immune system for sure is disordered or stressed, hyperactive or underactive in autistic individuals. And, you know, there's lots and lots of information out there about each of these different body systems, and there's a gazillion different ways you can approach these different body systems. But one way that I like to simplify for parents is by this simple phrase, and again, this came from Dr. Sydney Baker, my mentor. Think about autistic individuals as being sponges. They take everything in, but they can't get anything out. So that goes with things that you're saying to them. They take everything in, but they can't express themselves. And it has to do with toxicity, too. They're like little sponges. Their bodies are holding on to these toxins, and they can't release them. They have impaired detoxification pathways. So toxins in and toxins out is the way to go about treatment. So what I mean by that is you've really got to lessen the toxic burden that goes into these kids, you know, based on what they're eating, what they're putting on their body, what they're exposed to. And you have to increase, you know, the cleanup, the toxins out. So you have to really get pretty aggressive with detoxification protocols that will help their body naturally get rid of the things that are accumulated in their body. And that's when you start making really real progress with their health, with their immune systems, their digestion, their neurologic systems.
When I started studying all the different aspects of this condition, I started making analogies in my brain to that movie, The Green Mile, where that one prisoner could feel other people's sicknesses and pains, and he took them in, and it eventually affected him. But It seems like these children are hypersensitive, and that's what the audience, I think, needs to realize, that the reason that they might shun loud noises is because it affects them more than it would affect us, etc.
Yes, and there are so many wonderful books out there written by autistic individuals that describe their experiences, so you can understand you know, what it's like for them to be living in their bodies. And, you know, the point I wanted to make earlier, too, for parents, especially of those that are nonverbal autistic individuals, you know, if your child is at a school and they're having frequent meltdowns or frustrations or tantrums, there's a good possibility, I would say almost 100% possibility, that they are frustrated because they are either being assumed to be very low functioning and not understanding of the things around them, and they're treated like infants or children when in reality they very much have their intellect intact, but they very much have a body that doesn't cooperate with them. So they get very frustrated and they pick up on the low expectation of the people around them, and imagine what that would be like, being trapped inside of a body when people don't believe in you, and they put you in a room and they expect you to do, you know, simple, you know, 1 + 1, 2 + 2, where you're just bored out of your mind, literally. So important for parents to think about, you know, kids that are nonverbal or unable to express themselves fully, what's really going on when they're having tantrums or frustrated, because the tantrum and frustration has nothing to do with the autism. It has to do with the environment that they're in.
I'd like to pick up on that in a little bit, but one point that I wanted to make sure we covered before time runs out, it appears that in less than 40 years, autism has increased from 1 in 5,000 in 1975 to 1 in 68 in 2014. Is this epidemic on the rise? Is it an epidemic? Is it something we're seeing more of because we're recognizing it? What's your view on this?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an epidemic. And, you know, there's lots of different theories out there, but I think the simple explanation for it is, you know, this is 2017. When you look back 100 years ago and you look at the, you know, the chemicals that were in the environment then compared to now, you know, we're poisoning ourselves. You know, I don't like to be alarmist, and I don't like to say, you know, we're destroying the planet and all these other things, but we sort of are. So, you know, we have so many thousands of chemicals in the environment, so many things that are in our air, our water, our food supply. And, you know, as human beings living with all of this, there's a bioaccumulation and there's going to be a tipping point. So, you know, we're reaching that tipping point. So more and more kids are going to be affected than they were 50 years ago, or certainly 100 years ago, because, you know, we reach a tipping point. We reach a tipping point of toxicity, and it's just going to keep getting worse and worse, just like all the other chronic illnesses are going to continue to escalate.
Well, I have some more questions along that line, but right now we're about halfway through, and I want to remind our friends that you're listening to One-on-One Stories with your host, Dr. Gregory Barroza. Our guest today is Dr. Andrea Labuti, and we are discussing her unique perspective on autism and how it affects her family. It's interesting, you oversimplify in your book, but I like it. You oversimplify the fact that many of the symptoms we're seeing may be due to simple problems such as increased stress, anxiety, fear, plus all the environmental toxins. And as you said, you don't want to be an alarmist, but piece by piece, we're adding more and more to the environment, including electromagnetic radiation with all our cellular, digital, internet communications. We don't see these things happening around us, but they are. And I just want to add one point before I want your comments on this. I know that some of the whales that beach themselves and the dolphins are being destroyed because these noises underwater are killing their migratory patterns. They're not used to this, and they're sort of the canaries, as you would in the sea, just like perhaps maybe our autistic children are the canaries within our society telling us something's out of whack here. So maybe you have a couple comments about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I like to look at that from a micro and a macro viewpoint. So the micro viewpoint is, you know, the bioaccumulation, the toxicity, all of the things that we're doing to our planet and to ourselves. And, you know, I used to use that analogy all the time, the canaries in the coal mine, right? These kids are the most sensitive, you know, beings, and they're going to be first affected. So that's sort of the micro piece of it. But the macro piece of it, too, and, you know, without getting woo-woo on you, I think there's a bigger thing at play here. I think that you know, I think that this is a wake-up call for us. I think that these kids are here and, you know, having worked with some very sensitive, nonverbal autistic individuals that really tune into, you know, for lack of a better word, their higher selves, their, you know, a different sort of perspective, you know, we have to stop what we're doing. We can't continue to work the way we're working. We can't continue to ignore the environment. We can't continue to ignore ourselves, our families, and expect to survive. It's like a hey, you got to slow down. And what better way for a you know, for a society or a group of individuals to stop what they're doing and evaluate their life than to have a child that is affected, right? Everybody knows that, you know, if you have a child that's very sick with a certain illness or, you know, Christopher Reeve, the spinal cord injury, or Michael J. Fox, Parkinson's, these are the kinds of things that incentivize us to make a change. And autistic kids are sort of the perfect catalyst for us to, you know, for parents, you know, moms first, and then families and communities to say, hey, we have to wake up here. You know, we've got to slow down. We've got to stop, you know, forcing, you know, these kids to be a certain way, and we have to back up and look at a bigger picture of what might be going on here. I don't know if that made sense, but what I'm saying is there is a bigger picture issue here, and there's a small, you know, the micro picture as well.
Well, it made perfect sense, and what attracted me to you and your story was your book and hearing certain renditions from within it and then reading it in detail. And I think you were picked out because of your unique perspective, not only as a parent but as a physician, to try to put this in perspective and say, hey, medicine's one thing, but what are we doing here? And without getting, as you said, woo-woo, you started talking about spirituality, et cetera. I'm not going to go into that today. Maybe we'll get you back on another time to talk about that. But for years, people have been religious, and now it's become more of a spiritual. It doesn't matter what God you pray to, as long as you have a set in your lifestyle here and have the right purpose. I'd like to ask you, how's Jack doing today?
You know, Jack... Jack is doing amazing, actually.
How old is he, by the way, at this point?
He's 13 and a half.
Okay.
And one of the things that I'm so excited about for him this year is a new school that has, a new type of school that has evolved for these individuals. And, you know, as I said, I homeschooled him up until the end of last school year for 4 years. And now he's at a new school called the Long Island Whole Child Academy. It's a school for twice exceptional learners. And what that means simply is that he has superior intelligence, right? The twice exceptional piece is he's gifted, but he is also challenged, learning challenged. So because of the sheer number of these kids, whether they have ADD or Asperger's or autism, there's clearly a need for a different model to educate these kids. And because Jack is now in this school that very specifically looks at him as a unique individual with lots of challenges and lots of gifts, I feel like he's in the most amazing place that he could be in right now in terms of education. He has a friend now at school, which he never had before. All of the things that we work on, you know, asking questions, responding to questions, understanding things, all of these things are organically starting to fill in because he's in the right environment. He's in an environment where people believe in his abilities and they are really not forcing him to be any certain way. In other words, I guess what I'm trying to say is because I found an environment where they're really focusing on his strengths, he's thriving. And I would just stress for every parent to figure out what your child's strengths are and then advocate for them to be in an educational environment where the teachers and the people that are touching your child every day believe in the strengths of your child and believe that your child has potential and capabilities. My son is very happy, very smart, and, you know, he's thriving. He's excited to get on a bus every morning, and he's blowing the teachers away. So he's doing really great. He's still very autistic. If you saw him, you'd say, that's an autistic child. But that's okay. That's okay. We're working with him, and we're gonna allow him to be the best that he can be. And it's been an awesome journey.
Well, it's inspirational, and I'm glad you said that. And there's other people out there, hopefully, that can look into these possibilities. I know where my own children, high school children, go to school, that there's more of an awareness to what they call special needs students. I don't know if that's a fair analogy, but they're autistic children and children with Asperger's and other situations. My own kids, by the way, one of them had some issue with ADH or was diagnosed that way. I certainly overcome it and is doing exceptionally well. But the children today, the high school kids, for the most part, are very accepting of someone that's not identical to them. And it's very encouraging. If I had to ask you, what's the one most valuable lesson you want to leave the listeners with, what would that be?
Well, there's probably more than one. Do I have to narrow it down to one? Okay, so
we have time for one.
Okay, so you know what I would tell listeners, I would tell parents, I would tell teachers, You have to keep the bar high. You really have to have a curiosity and a desire to want to know what the unique gift or strength of any individual is. And once you start focusing on that, all of the other things that they're doing, whether it's odd behaviors or disruptive behaviors or inability to communicate, once you approach that child with a belief in their capabilities, even if you haven't figured out what their capabilities are yet, that is going to open up an entirely new relationship and future for that child. It just is. You have to approach them with the expectation that there's something good in there and that you want to figure out what it is, because that will change the dynamic. And your child will know that if your child knows that you believe in them, I mean, let's face it, we all feel great when people believe in us, and these kids are no different, and most of the time, they get the opposite. So you got to give them that. You have to give them that and let it unfold and be curious.
Well, as they say, from your lips to God's ears, I want to thank today's special guest, emergency room physician and parent of an autist, Dr. Andrea Labuti, for sharing her personal real-life inspirational story with us. Dr. Labuti, your experiences created a catalyst for change in which you discovered that one can choose love over fear when faced with adversity. I encourage our listeners not only to read her book, Awakened by Autism, but to, if you have a greater interest in this show or any of our shows, please visit my website, www.oneononestories.com, or email me via info@oneononestories.com. With comments, feedback, future show suggestions, recommended guests and topics, and for additional information. This sort of concludes part two of our two-part series on autism, a very unique inspirational story and approach. Dr. Labuti, our sincere thanks for sharing your time, expertise, and very personal story with us.
Thank you, Dr. Burrows. It's been my pleasure.